Hi, this is Jim.
And this is Max.
Check out our podcast, The Step Over, Liberty Ballers Podcast Network, for all of your Sixers needs.
Player analysis, game breakdowns, who would look coolest in a headband, and more.
Subscribe to Liberty Ballers Podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts, and check out The Step Over, a podcast about Sixers basketball.
Mostly.
It's out of here! Home run, Lenny Dykstra!
Stairs rips one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
The Phillies win the game on a base hit by Mitch Williams at 4:40 in the morning.
Swing and a miss, struck him out. It's wacky, wonderful. Bunch of throwbacks has won the National League pennant.
Welcome to your latest episode of Continued Success. A podcast that's a part of the Good Fight podcast family with myself, the brand managing editor of the Good Fight, Justin Clue, and Yahoo Sports' own Liz Rocher. Hello, Liz.
Hello, Justin. How are you?
I'm great. You know, I'm sure anyone listening right now is just thinking, oh, baseball podcast, you know, Phillies podcast. What is even going on right now? What is there to talk about? There's no topics to really cover and wax on about for an hour. And what are they going to do? Just silently. Is this going to be an hour of two different people just eating sandwiches, making mouth noises over 60 minutes? And to those people, you know, you idiot. This is going to be our best podcast yet. This is our best episode. We thrive in this situation because there is always something in baseball to talk about. It is a terrible sport. That's like an infection. It gets in deep. You just gotta dig deep enough to find the topics everyone wants to hear about. And I can tell you what people don't want to hear about is exactly what everyone's talking about right now, Liz. I don't know if you are aware of the different turns and twists that Manny Machado and Bryce Harper news has taken, but this week it's all about Manny Machado's agent releasing a statement saying he's calling Buster Olney and Bob Nightingale's reporting on the free agency rumors as inaccurate and reckless. And then we had something about Manny Machado's father saying he received an offer from the Dodgers. And, you know, these are the sources we're going with these days to get our news. And I mean, don't you just feel super informed about this? Like you have a complete understanding of what's going on?
Yes, entirely. There's nothing wrong. This is all how it's supposed to be. And we're all feeling totally normal. This is how every offseason feels.
I mean, there's an
it
obvious...
feels like you're slowly losing your mind.
There's an obvious labor, you know, issue that's become very clear given the amount of time we've been waiting and the sort of deals we've been seeing guys get. And I believe it was Evan Longoria posted something.
Yeah,
today,
there's been some fire lately. I mean, there's also been some stupidity on the part of the media. Like I'm in the middle. I here in Dayton, the local university, Wright State, their professors are about to strike, and the media around here is just sort of carrying water for them. And it feels like they're members of the baseball media that are doing that for teams. You know, yesterday, Ken Rosenthal wrote an article for The Athletic, and I respect Ken tremendously, but this was just, it was, you know, for the good of baseball, players and Tony Clark of the Players Union need to work with Rob Manfred on his ideas on how to make the game better. For the good of the game, they need to put aside their anger and, you know, tactics that you use in these types of labor disputes, you know, which is not participating in, you know, things like interviews, not giving an inch to Major League Baseball at all. He's like, they should just forget all of that. And for the good of the game, a game that they're not being played enough to paid enough to play, they should just roll over and do what he wants.
Yeah, that was a pretty ridiculous thing to see a national writer saying. He seemed very much on the side of, yeah, I know you're mad, but just don't be, because fans,
good of the game, like the game.
That's just such a silly statement. The good of the game, like the game hasn't gone through labor stoppages before, hasn't gone through wrinkles between labor and ownership before and emerged, you know, better or worse. Like this happens. This is something that happens, and it's very necessary. And just to quote that Evan Longoria post, the Jesus, what team does he play for now? The Giants?
I think so. Yeah, he stayed on the Giants, and McCutchen got traded to the Yankees, and now he's on the Phillies, and Longoria is two teams ago.
Yes, and Longoria posted on Instagram. It was an image of Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, Craig Kimbrell, and Dallas Keuchel, and he says, "We are less than a month from the start of spring, and once again, some of our biggest stars remain unsigned. Such a shame. It seems every day now someone is making up a new analytical tool to devalue players, especially free agents. As fans, why should value for your team even be a consideration? It's not your money. It's money that players have worked their whole lives to get to that level and be deserving of. Bottom line, fans should want the best players and product on the field for their team. And as players, we need to stand strong for what we believe we are worth and continue to fight for the rights we have fought for time and time again." Nothing really wrong, I would say, with what he's saying there. Like, anybody who thinks, it's just funny to look back and think of all the times we were like, yeah, like, oh, it's so good that the team saved money and on this deal and did this, because I guess as fans, you're thinking, oh, they saved money, which means that money will go towards a better player later or something. But this, just the idea of, no, of rooting for you.
Some people don't even know what that goes to. Some people just, it's the concept of saving money or the concept of not paying players as much as they should be. It's like, I feel it's related to our whole culture of, you know, wanting to get something for under its value and that being considered, you know, a very good thing. And, you know, in this, you know, world we live in where things are, you know, the profit margins on some things are enormous while workers still get paid nothing. Like, it's all tied in together. I think people just want to save money because it sounds like a good thing to do. Like, well, if that were me, I would want to save money, right?
Right.
Isn't that what you want? Like, yes, but you're not them. You're you. You're a fan. And what you want is your team to win. That is what you want. That should be what every fan is loudly demanding and clamoring for at every available moment they have.
And even if you don't win, you want players on the team that you can recognize or root for or like have hope for the next season that they will be at the center of whatever success awaits you. I mean, then just to see responses, like one guy replied to Longoria saying, "Boo-hoo, I bust my ass off every day at work helping to run this country. I don't make shit. This pouty money talk really makes me lose respect for you rich players. Come live the life of an average American for a week before you start complaining." As if these players came out of the womb making the money they would make as professional athletes, as if every baseball player hasn't for a decent chunk of their lives been an average American. Like, they were just came from another planet full of baseball players who were good. And then, if they created this system where, like, the owners are paying millions of dollars for players and then unwilling to pay millions of dollars despite setting the standard. I mean, it's absurd.
Well, and there's an inherent issue, and like, you have to, the dude in a small way has a point. You know, the work that people do should be highly valued no matter what it is. No matter, you know, whether you're running the country or playing a baseball game, what you do should be valued and you should be paid well to do it. Everyone should. There isn't a job that isn't important. You know, everyone does something in service to other people. So, you know, it would be great if we lived in that world. We don't. We live in a world where salaries are based on, to a certain extent, the money that you bring in, the revenue that you produce. Baseball players have the biggest case in the world to make more because the revenue that they produce is enormous. Revenues in baseball are at the highest level, and people act like the players should not want a piece of it. They act like players shouldn't want to be paid, you know, in concert with what comes in, like with what they're responsible for. Like, if the workers owned the means of production here, no one would have anything to say because the owners would be the players and they would get a piece and they'd get to decide where things went. I'm not saying that is an ideal thing, but it's frustrating to me that people don't understand the relationships here.
They just see millionaires who are saying, in some cases millionaires, who are saying, "I'm not making enough money." And I get why that is frustrating. But like, if you're not siding with the players, then you're siding with the owners who are richer than the players and are doing the same thing. They're just not as visible.
Yeah, and it's not that they're not being paid enough. It's not being paid what they're worth. There's
a
difference.
And they didn't create the market.
Exactly. They didn't create the market. You want them to be paid less? Stop paying attention. Stop being a baseball fan. That's the only way to make that actually matter. And no one really wants to do that because baseball is great. I love baseball. I always forget that when the off season comes, this is all we have to talk about. And I'm just yelling about socialist baseball stuff from the top of my imaginary building, you know, waving my fist and screaming at the people below like a crazy person.
We could talk about the nice rational topic of Hall of Fame voting if you want to switch to a different offseason.
I'll say this. As soon as I realized that Roy Halladay was going to have no problems getting in, I started paying attention to other things. And there are some good things mm-hmm. and some bad things that you'll see. Good thing is that both Clemens and Bonds, Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, both have, before the private votes, the votes that have not been revealed beforehand, before those have been counted, they're all in the high 70s. They're like the mid 70s. They're like sort of like the upper mm-hmm. band of the low 70s. They're going to make it in a couple of years. I've looked ahead at the Hall of Fame in the next couple of years. And aside from like one or two names, it's not very inspiring for a little bit. So it's going to be like they're clearing out a lot of people this year and last year. And I think the year before, this is going to be the third straight five-man class, because the bad coin flip here is Curt Schilling is most likely going to get into the Hall of Fame. He is just at just about 75 before the private ballots, and the private ballots typically run more traditionalist than the public ones.
And unfortunately,
sad trombone.
I did mention the Hall of Fame as a throwaway joke. I had not planned to talk about it, but we're talking about it, and we're talking about Curt.
I'm sorry. I got angry. I had nowhere else to go.
It's okay.
I had nowhere else to go with it.
Where can this anger go if not into a podcast? And we already mentioned frustrations with someone we respect, Ken Rosenthal, once on this podcast. And I'm going to do it again here and mention that I was really disappointed in Jason Stark's Hall of Fame balloting article. Jason Stark is a brilliant Philadelphia raised baseball writer who I have nothing but respect for. But I just
he'd be a Hall of Fame baseball writer. He's winning the Spink. He's won the Spink Award.
Spink Award winner this year. Well deserved. Wonderful guy. I just found myself unable to get past his explanation for Curt Schilling, which is, it's just so much of what we've seen already. Now, if you're somebody who believes Curt Schilling should be in the Hall of Fame because it's the Baseball Hall of Fame and not the Personality Hall of Fame and that whole argument, then that's fine. We just disagree, and I don't expect to change anyone's mind on that. And it's very easy for a lot of people to turn this into like a political debate. And that's, I understand that. But that's the problem, is that so much of Curt Schilling now is associated with what you would call political, but really aren't even political beliefs. They're just hateful, just evil, stupid, ignorant things that he says. So to see Jason Stark sum up the reason for why he's voting for Curt Schilling, I mean, he lists his stats, which are Hall of Fame stats, and then mm-hmm. says, we're voting. Here we go one more time. We're voting for the Hall of Fame, not the Hall of Twitter. Okay, so you're separating that and making it about baseball, which I understand. My argument this whole time has been, even if you feel like we haven't done it yet, and what precedent is there to keep a guy out based on the things he said and tweeted and posted on social media, even if that's your argument, I would say let's start now. This guy has done damage to the real world and continues to do so, and he's proud of himself for it. So to see him welcome back, not only just by the Phillies this past year, see him get a pass from the media when he came to town and they ushered him in and talked to him about the good old days without talking about exactly what everybody thinks of when they think of Curt Schilling these days, which is the Breitbart Curt Schilling, not the baseball Curt Schilling, that it was despicable and irresponsible and bad. And then to see Jason Stark just say that, which is okay, fine. But then he goes on to say Schilling was polling at about 74% on the tracker, so he's closing in. But he'll have just three elections remaining after this year. If Mike Messina makes it this time around, it would stand to reason he'd be next in line. But then again, .. Twitter. So what was frustrating was seeing it all summed up as everything that Curt Schilling has done summed up into one word, as if Twitter is the problem. Yes, we probably wouldn't be as familiar with Curt Schilling's beliefs if not for social media, but he would still believe them. And just summing up transphobic comments and hateful anti-Muslim memes and just ignorant statements around the clock, contributing.
He's also a QAnon guy, and if you don't know what that is, do not look it up.
Right, and contributing to media outlets that have associated themselves with really just broken, fracture-brained commentary on society, just hateful rhetoric. Just summing that all up as Twitter is just really disingenuous and very sad to see a guy I respect so much like Jason Stark falling into that category. And I get, like, some people just don't want to talk about it. They just want it to be about the Hall of Fame. And trust me, nobody wants baseball to be about baseball more than me. But you got to understand that it's not anymore. And because maybe it's because of social media, maybe it's because of just the modern game. It doesn't matter why. But this kind of stuff is ingrained in baseball. They're attached now. It's just unavoidable. Sports and politics are unavoidably connected, and everyone knows that by now. And acting like it's not is just willfully ignorant. So to see everything that Curt Schilling has done summed up just as Twitter, as if he's just the same as every run-of-the-mill guy, as if he's just been like obnoxiously retweeting cat memes for the past couple of years, and that's what people think of when they think of Curt Schilling, is really disingenuous and disappointing.
Yeah. Well said, by the way. And I want to make it clear, like, I disagree with the political views of a lot of Hall of Famers, most likely. A lot of potential Hall of Famers, you know? I mean, with dudes entering the Hall, who will enter the Hall of Fame this year, who have entered the Hall of Fame recently, like, a dude gives to a Republican cause, that's fine. The dude speaks about, you know, for the, you know, the current president, fine. That is his right. But there's a difference between that, like, if you know, I don't feel like those dudes shouldn't make the Hall of Fame. I feel like Curt Schilling shouldn't, because instead of there's a difference between, you know, Republican and Curt Schilling, you know, and that he's just so open with sharing that stuff online, like it's something to be proud of. Like, you know, there's a difference between, you know, Mike Schmidt's brand of, you know, Republican ignorance, because he's a conservative dude. There's a difference between that and Curt Schilling. Like, it's just, it's over a line. There's a line that's been crossed here somewhere, you know, and I guess it would be helpful if I could identify it, but I can't. I can't tell you what it is, but there's a difference between, you know, supporting the Republican Party, which I am against personally, but, you know, it is your right. And Curt Schilling, like, from now on, we're not going to have to spell out whatever it is.
Right.
That, you know, reasons why. We're just going to say Curt Schilling, even though he is in the Hall of Fame.
If there's that big of an elephant in the room, then it's not worth glossing over. It's impossible to gloss over. And to see it glossed over like that in an effort to honor him for any reason, I mean, it's going to expand his platform. It's going to give him a chance to speak his mind. What are the odds his look, Curt Schilling, after being extremely vocal, you know, saw it was going to cost him Hall of Fame votes, complained a little bit, and then shut the hell up for a while. And that was another very shameful thing about this whole process, was that he made that he liked that shirt that was joking about lynching journalists, and a bunch of the baseball writers were like, well, I'm not voting for you. A year went by, Schilling stayed quiet for most of the time, and baseball writers were like, all right, all's forgiven. Let's get back on the honoring you for your fastball train.
John Heyman was one of those guys. He very publicly did not vote for Schilling that year, and then went right back.
Which told us that, like, they didn't care about anybody else that Schilling was trying to reach into the world and cause actual harm to. But journalists, that was affecting them. So they had to have a response to that.
But only for a year did they really even feel like they wanted to punish him for it. Just, you know, to make a show.
Right.
Not to actually punish him.
Look at the power we have, you know. and to your point of who knows where the line is, to that I just keep saying, why not make it here? You know, let's start here.
Yeah.
Let's just start with this being the line.
And it's pretty far out. Again, I'm not saying that people who are conservative Republicans shouldn't get into the Hall of Fame. There are a lot of them there. A lot of them believe in stuff that I hate. That's not the issue. The issue is that Curt Schilling spews hateful, hateful crap from his pie hole whenever he gets the chance.
Right.
I don't think he'll do it during his Hall of Fame speech. I really hate that he's going to have a platform and that it gives everyone a chance to continue to gloss over his beliefs.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder if he stays on topic during that Hall of Fame speech.
I bet he does. He's not stupid.
I think he would.
You know, Curt Schilling is a lot of things, but he's not stupid.
I got to tell you, there's the reason I can't say with 100% certainty is because he's also a guy who just can't help himself. So, you know, he's already said, like, it's because I'm a conservative. I wasn't allowed into the Hall of Fame, which is hilarious, given what we're saying, that there's definitely tons of conservative baseball players in the Hall of Fame, right? But he claimed that was the issue. It's tough to imagine him, yeah, being dumb enough to use that platform to say more things that he believed were keeping him out. But at the same time, it's tough to believe he wouldn't try to sneak in a couple of barbs, you know, at least use the word like triggered or snowflake, you know, like just that garden variety dollar store kind of conservatism crap that like he could sneak in there and be like, oh yeah, it was just the word I used, you know, like.
Well, I mean, my reason for thinking that he won't do that is because he has one of those respect of the game.
Oh, yes.
Attitude.
Yeah.
Like it, this is, you know, hallowed ground and people who have gone before and blah blah bullshit.
To all those players who have filled a sock with ketchup and put it on their foot, I respect you. I've just been following in your footsteps this whole time. Well, in any case.
I'm so sorry I dragged us off topic. I had anger about this earlier this week and I couldn't, it bubbled right over.
You know,
where else do I put this, you know, if not into a live microphone?
Exactly. And you know, like I'm like I said, this is a polarized, and there's been no issue probably more polarizing than this for whatever reason. It's certainly given that the political climate in this country sort of contributes to that. And again, I don't expect to convince anybody. And, you know, I hadn't intended to talk about it. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, it's an issue and it's real. And, you know, yeah, we gotta work this out of our system somewhere. Because I keep saying I'm going to stop talking about the Hall of Fame because it's so frustrating. The Schilling issue is just a part of that. It's just the general way it's handled. But here I am talking about it again. So it is unavoidable. But just to get back to the other extremely not frustrating baseball topic, we are going to touch briefly on Machado and Harper. Well, mainly just Harper, in that Bryce Harper and Gabe Kapler reportedly got on famously when the Phillies went out to Las Vegas to meet with Bryce Harper. And I saw one headline suggest that it was over Philadelphia food that they managed to. That's where they found some common ground.
Really? Which, who said that?
I don't know, some CBS headline. Like, who knows? Yeah. CBS Sports. Phillies Kapler says he bonded with Bryce Harper over Philadelphia's food scene during free agency meeting. The Phil's second year manager confirms he hit it off with the prized free agent in Las Vegas, which is hilarious given the initial concerns that Gabe Kapler was turning off free agents from coming to Philadelphia. Before we get to the obviously more important topic here, which is bonding with people over Philadelphia food, I do want to say, yeah. I think saying Gabe Kapler would turn off free agents from coming to Philadelphia is something that someone with a personal beef or with like an anti-Kapler gimmick is going to beat that drum much more fervently than it needs to be beaten. The person who was beating it the most was Howard Eskin. But I will say that, you know, I don't think it's entirely unrealistic. I mean, I don't know. Maybe you differ on this. I think that he's intense is the word that we see described to describe Gabe Kapler most of the time. He has very clear thoughts on specific issues, and there's definitely a way that the Phillies clubhouse and franchise is being run right now. And he's come to represent that. So I can see that being something, like at least a factor. Maybe that is an issue. I mean, what do you think?
Oh, I think it's entirely possible. Kapler's not everybody's cup of tea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like just, that's why, you know, you like some people, you don't like some people. There are people out there who don't necessarily, who would not get along with him. They're just different personalities. But the thing about baseball is that, you know, you kind of have to learn how to live with it. Because if it's your manager, that's who it is. You know, but when you're Bryce Harper, you don't necessarily have to. If you don't jive with whoever it is you're, you know, who you're visiting, then you can move on. Thankfully, it sounds like that he, you know, really bonded with Gabe Kapler, which I love. I kind of love the idea of the two of them broing out about anything.
I mean, they are both bros and they are both intense. Like, those are both.
I don't mean any of that negatively, by the way. There's a way to be negative about bros, but this is very positive.
Nor do I mean that negatively. This is a very positive bro environment right now, I feel like. You know, have you ever seen somebody you would classify as a bro, like helping a kid? Like, that's super charming. That's a branch out of the bro tree that's like a super positive thing to see. I feel like I'm starting to talk like a stereotypical bro.
I was
bro.
Just going to say, like, my goodness.
But not.
I don't know. My fiance and I have conversations about bro culture constantly because there are very bad parts of it. But, you know, people who are really serious about it, it's kind of interesting. Yes. I find it all fascinating. We don't have to talk about this more. I just wanted to say.
What I'm saying is I don't want to talk about this more. No, I totally get it. And at the same time, you couldn't tell me that Gabe Kapler would be the first manager somebody didn't want to play for in Philadelphia. Like, you can't tell.
Yeah.
Me. So, or in baseball, every team anywhere, you know, every manager has a personality or a way that we tend to paint these in the broadest strokes where we're saying, like, that manager is old school. That manager is new school. You know, that manager relies on tobacco spit and his gut. That guy relies on a calculator and analytics. But that's not the case. I mean, it is to an extent, but like, there's tons of other facets that go into this. You know, that guy has coffee breath. That guy talks too loudly at his default setting. That guy has like a dog he's always bringing around, and the dog is really aggressive and terrible, and the owner is too blind to see that. Like, that's, you know, little facets that go into players, whether they bond with their managers or not. And we just know so much about Gabe Kapler's personality that I think it's a more marketable gimmick for somebody to harp on.
Yes.
That being said,
let us not forget Chase Utley nearly killed Ryan Sandberg with his bare hands.
Yeah.
Like, it was obvious that he did not like him, and a number of players didn't like him. That doesn't mean he was the worst manager for everybody, but he was the worst manager for most people.
For that Phillies team, certainly. Yeah.
Oh my God, yes. For that Phillies team, or almost any Phillies team.
Look at Terry Francona. I mean, I'm not saying that he didn't get along with his players, but obviously he wasn't able to, you know, be the manager the Phillies needed at that time. And they were not a very good team while he was here. And then he goes on to become, you know, a Hall of Fame manager with two other franchises. Like,
yeah,
it just doesn't happen sometimes. That being said, to get to the more important, issue that we're discussing here, Liz, if you were trying to bond with or seduce someone using solely a Philadelphia based food, what would be your go-to? Like, if you walked into that meeting and Bryce Harper was like, you know, I'm on the fence, or like, the answer is no, unless you can give me a food from Philadelphia that will sell me on it. Like, and we can say, you know, cheese sticks, roast pork, soft pretzel. You can go as broad as that, or you can zero in on something specifically that you would be like, all right, buddy, get in the car, and I'm going to swing you via your taste buds to coming to this city for 10 years.
See, here's the thing. I haven't lived in Philadelphia, you know, so I was 7.
But you've been there. You have visited. You've come through.
I've been there. I have visited.
Everyone knows the best cheesesteaks are consumed at 2 or 3 in the morning, and you never remember it anyway. So, like, you know, it's all conjecture. It's all subjective.
It's entirely true. I mean, my go-to for Philadelphia is almost always a good hot pretzel, because I love bread. I'm a lover of carbs and of bread in general. Man, I love that. I love really good hot pretzel. I dig Federal Donuts. It feels like really lame. I feel lame saying it, but the thing is, I just love donuts in general.
That's
I
great.
Love donuts. I'm a huge, like, again, with the carbs. I do love bread-based things, but I mean, it's hard to go wrong with any. The reason why Philadelphia foods are, I would say, more well-known than almost any other regional food. Like, I guess there's New York pizza and hot dogs, and Chicago's got that Frankenstein pizza concoction over there. But
I'm sorry, pizza and hot dogs. And yeah, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying New York being known for those things, those are just like food. That's just food. That's not like specialty food. It's just.
Oh, I know. But like, people, it's New York style pizza, Chicago style pizza are a thing. You know, it's what's associated with the city rather than, I guess, what the city is known for. And I guess that it's true that Philadelphia food is both distinctive and, you know, well known. It's not like pizza. It is cheesesteak.
Right. I thought
hot pretzel.
When you were saying distinct
Amish things.
When you were saying distinct, I thought you were going to say disgusting. And I was like, yeah, that's
no. Oh my God,
it's
no.
It's super gross. It's super good, but it is super gross. Like eating the food is one
like,
thing.
I would just
watching your body consume the food, like on the inside, not something you want to bear witness to. We have literally a food in our city, which is two of the foods rolled together into one food. And I don't know if you've ever had a South Street taco or a South Philly taco or whatever it is. It's really a burrito. And I have done this. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, I woke up the next day and I kind of wanted to have another one. I don't know. Maybe my metabolism hadn't like really destroyed me yet, but I was like, I could do it again. I could. And yeah. And I'm of course talking about this rolling one of the giant pieces of pizza up you get on South Street with a Jim's cheesesteak. And doing that is, you know, I'm not going to say it's a rite of passage. I'm just saying it was something that
an invitation for a heart attack.
I hadn't done the I'd never had one. I'd always heard about it, and I'd never had one. And I was with some friends. We were playing trivia. One of them just revealed like, "Oh yeah, it was my birthday the other day." And I was like, "Oh crap! Like we have to go out for your birthday after we win this trivia thing. We won a trivia, and then we were on South Street already." And finally, it popped into, I've never done this. I've never done the South Street taco before. So you go down to Lorenzo and Sons, get a giant piece of pizza. They're huge. They only sell cheese, except I think one day a week they offer like a topping of some kind. And then you get this giant piece of pizza. You roll up a Jim's cheesesteak in it. And then you just eat that terrible mess. And I don't think anything – I'm pretty sure that's the monster that chases Gabe Kapler in his nightmares. But – if you're going to give somebody a crash course in Philadelphia, that's us. It's like, oh, we have three foods here. One is this food. The other is that food. The third food is both of those foods combined into one food. But if I had to convince somebody to spend 10 years here, that would not be how I did it. That's just a personal favorite of mine that exists.
It wouldn't be Scrapple either. Scrapple is sort of advanced. That's like an advanced course in Philadelphia food. That's, you have to love Phil. If you're not from there and you didn't grow up with Scrapple, that's like, you have to really love the city and be ready for food. Ready for something different before you try Scrapple.
That's like,
hey, oh man, do I love Scrapple.
That's like, hey, I got you this. And you're like, oh, what is it? And you're like, oh, it's Scrapple. You're like, no, but what is it? And you're just like, and they're like, no, but what is it? And you're like, no, just eat it. And they're like, what is it? And you're like, you should put that in your mouth and eat it now because we're about to have a problem. Like, yeah, that's.
It's not pig entrails and stardust and sawdust.
Definitely this wasn't made by Amish bare hands this morning. So put it in your mouth right now. Do it. Eat it. We're having a problem. Yeah. I got to say, I feel like you can meet me on this one. I would want to factor Tired Hands into it a little bit. You know, that's not in the city. That's out in Ardmore. But Tired Hands Brewery is, I got a soft spot for Yards. Obviously, Yards I would want to involve as well. But Tired Hands is just a terrific brewing company that has sprung up in the more contemporary Philadelphia beer scene. I don't know.
Sean and I just went there. We were just there in early December when my cousin got married. And we went there for a night. It was the first time it was good food and really delicious beer. Oh.
And as a happy hour enthusiast of great Philadelphia residents, I'm ashamed at what I always say the best happy hour is, because it's a Steven Starr restaurant, which is just like so corporate and like, I have this restaurant that's this themed and this restaurant that's this themed and blah, blah, blah. It's not just like a bar in a neighborhood that has a great happy hour, because those exist. But the one that I keep that just never leaves my head is the one at Feta Sal on Frankfurt Ave, where the Steven Starr theme is like barbecue, rustic, wooden panels, deviled eggs, like that kind of stuff. But for whatever reason, it's just one of those ones that has disappeared time and time again. That's just like half off everything, half off the beer, half off the appetizers. Do you want like a full mason jar of beer? That's half off too. It's brilliant. I love it. I can't get enough of it. You can get like a bunch of deviled eggs and leftover meat leavings that they're selling. They're basically just like, eat our garbage at half price. And you're like, I will do that because I've had two full mason jars of beer. And I'm ready. I've readied my body to do that. And then on top of that, I mean, if you really wanted to convince somebody to spend 10 years in Philadelphia, just find some, one of the dives, it's Murph's, or the place literally just called the dive, and just just give them Philly specials until they're ready to until you can convince them of anything. You know, I feel like that would be a nice way to bond, you know, Bryce Harper and Gabe Kapler. However, I will, you know, admit that, again, all of these things are things that are definitely, I feel, outside of Gabe Kapler and Bryce Harper's dietary circles. So that they were able to just like talk about food without consuming it and bond like that, that makes way more sense. So I totally get that. The point is that it's great that
it's like they talked about their cheat days.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And at the end of the day, it's just good that they, you know, reportedly got along. And like, also it's really depressing that that was news. Not that like, oh, and then they gave him a deal and he's thinking like leaning towards the Philly. Nothing even like that. It's just like they got along reportedly and like that was it. But Brett, yeah, it was Gabe Kapler said, he said, I think we bonded over stuff like training. I think we bonded over food. He loves food and Philadelphia has an incredible food scene among the best in the country, if you ask me. So yeah, I think we just hit it off. He's an easy guy to talk to and he certainly is especially competitive. I like how he's saying, I think we bonded over stuff like training and I think we bonded over food because it makes it seem like they just looked at each other and blacked out and just bonded so intensely that they don't even remember what they talked about. I feel like that's probably the best sign we've seen yet on the Philadelphia Phillies free agent scene thus far. And really there's nothing else to cling to. So let's just imagine this is what's happening.
Well, yes, let us.
In any case, that's what's going on there. Obviously the Manny Machado, none of this stuff's going to be decided for weeks. I mean, just accept it. Even if it's not, just turn your brain off to this stuff is my advice until something is actually reported. I gotta say, you know, occasionally throughout this off season, Jim Salisbury has provided like updates, like here's what's going on, here's what I think. That's honestly my go-to. He's not like reporting every day. Like he doesn't seem to be like tweeting the way like some of these national writers are, like, I'm hearing that, and then they just repackage yesterday's rumors into a new rumor, sort of. He's not doing that, and I feel like somebody like him or someone you hold to his level as far as reporting on the Phillies, until they say something, then you can just understand that it's just nothing. It's just stuff that guys are mandated to tweet a certain amount on a certain day, or just like feeding the blogs that feed off of this. And I say this as a representative of a Phillies blog, which is hilarious. But you know, I think if you went to the Good Fight right now, you would see, you know, a reasonable amount of Machado and Harper coverage. But at the same time, we're doing a pretty good job of finding stuff to at least, you know, at least once a day, pick a topic that has nothing to do with it, just to keep your mind on the Phillies without resorting to the just endless, meaningless Machado Harper speculation. It's going to end when it ends, and it's not over yet. And, you know, you got to just turn your brain off to it at this point. So speaking of turning your brain off, Liz, we had a recent report in the news involving the Phillies of, I'm laughing, but this is a story about a man facing almost 750 years in prison. This is a story about a guy who was arrested. Well, they list his name in the article. I don't know if we have a reason to even, you know, he's 37 year old man from Texas. And he's apparently been charged with 29 counts of wire fraud and 8 counts of mail fraud, for which he's received 20 years each. He could receive 20 years prison sentence for each sentence. And the crime he's committed is that, and I'm reading this reported by Lehigh Valley Live, that he impersonated members of bands such as 3 Days Grace, if you're familiar, but also members of baseball teams, including the Rangers and another team. The Rangers, it was the Rangers, the Diamondbacks, and the Phillies. He impersonated members of the Phillies. And, you know, we're not going to harp on this guy specifically, just the story kind of in general. When I ask you, Liz, if you were impersonating a Phillies player for personal gain, who would it be? And after you say it, I will tell you what my guess is for you. Please go.
It would be Rhys Hoskins. I feel like I could...
Oh, I'm sorry. Phillies player at any time, not just limited to now. God. They can still be Rhys Hoskins. Any Phillies player.
The enormity of that is just crushing me. I'm still. Yes. I think I'm still going with Rhys Hoskins. I feel like I could convincingly impersonate, at least, you know, on a keyboard, his absolute adorable enthusiasm for things, at least, you know, over his Twitter account. So that's my answer. It is not a great answer. Tell me what your guess is.
That's true. No, I totally get that. And I guess I wasn't thinking as far as communicating via text, but that's almost certainly how this was going down. And you're right. That's the wavelength we should be on when we talk about impersonating members of the Phillies, because you know, that's just how this had to have gone down. It wasn't like he was sending selfies and being like, "It's me, Reese Hoskins." And they were like, "Yeah, it definitely is. Send that guy some free gear." Absolutely. No. I think Reese Hoskins definitely imitatable. Meaning that in the best possible way.
Yeah, I absolutely
super wholesome, super positive. Yeah, definitely a guy I'm very happy is on the Phillies. My guess for you when I opened it up to all of Phillies all time would be probably the first Phillies player you and I ever discussed personally, which was Michael Stutes and his glorious wavy hair as it appeared on hot summer nights we're leaving for the Phillies from the bullpen. That I felt like was something you could pull off, not visually, but just like over the phone or like, yeah. I, again, he was somebody who had a little bit of a personality, but being a relief pitcher, you just didn't hear too much about it. And when he was with the Phillies, you know, social media was kind of just getting off the ground and its fledgling stay in its stage. So, you know, I think we didn't get to know him as well as we could have, but I think there was a person in there who would have been just so fun to impersonate.
I feel like his hair did a lot of that personality work for him.
I'm going to check right now, but I'm almost positive there's a Twitter account for Michael Stutes' hair. Not that I'm seeing, but yeah, chances are it's long dead.
Yeah, why would anyone?
What do you mean? I find it a relevant topic to my interests to this day, so I'm not sure what that would be shut down for. Personally, I think I could communicate via text form, and this is going to surprise absolutely no one, but as Shane Victorino, I feel like I've become very fluent in Shane-isms. Again, another wonderful, beautiful person who I couldn't be happier played for the Phillies and is a representative of the team. But I do think just having his, I think I got his cadence down. I think I got his overall personality as a fan of his, watching him come up as an all-star in Philadelphia. I think I could manage that. Just a lot of sentences, a lot of exclamation points, you know, a lot of punctuation, a lot of short stuff in there. You know, the problem is, Liz, that so much of what we remember about some of these players is not exactly how they were, but sort of the characterization that they received from like the online Phillies fandom, which is, you know, Chase Utley, teeth clenched, intense intensity, which I don't think is that far off. But Shane Victorino kind of just doing cartwheels all the time. Jimmy Rollins, sort of the class president, cool. You know, that kind of, you know, Kyle Kendrick, the little brother everyone picks on. Brett Myers, kind of a bully, you know, that kind of stuff. I think that's far. You know, they're born from an ounce of truth, but it's also, you know, it's deeply based in fiction.
Yes.
Yeah. So that was an interesting story we wanted to talk about. And lastly, Liz, you know, we're going to just, all we're talking about of late is, you know, deals and contracts and, you know, the really sexy, cool baseball stuff, you know, deals that take place in offices and numbers based on financial earnings. And God, it's just the best. It's just, what else is there to like about baseball? But I do, you know, this, we're talking about this on January 18th, and it just so happens on this day in Phillies history, two major Phillies players from their eras signed deals. One of them avoided arbitration to sign the largest contract in team history. And the other one just kind of, he got what he, I was going to say he got what he deserves, but that sounds like, you know, somebody pushed him off a ledge. But no, he just agreed to a 3-year deal. That was just, you know, there was definitely something that he had earned by that point. And the first guy was in 2002 on January 18th, and it was Scott Rolen who avoided arbitration with the Phillies for an $8.6 million 1-year deal, which again, yeah, it's the largest contract in team history, which is comical to look back on. He was a Gold Glove third baseman at this point. He the funny part of this is, and the part we can talk about, is that he did not want, the Phillies were like, so let's talk about maybe a multi-year component to this. And he was like, no, just absolutely not. Not just brick wall. absolutely not interested. Liz, is there anybody you can remember who was less interested in playing for the Phillies, who played for the Phillies, than Scott Rolen?
No. It's one of the reasons kind of why I love him. You know, he did not want to be here. I feel for him, you know, a little bit.
I feel like I was going to say, you could have put, "I don't want to be here," instead of his name on the back of his jersey. And I think people would have the same relationship with him just because they're basically synonyms at this point.
Yeah.
The difference between Scott Rolen and J.D. Drew is that Scott Rolen actually played here. And that's kind of it, except for, you know, statistically and the kind of baseball players they were. But like attitude towards Philadelphia wise, not a whole lot of difference.
Not really, no.
And I think people forgive Scott because, you know, he hit a ton of home runs and was tremendous. And he was probably the first star, like the first nationally recognized superstar that I was sort of like growing up with. Because the 93 Phillies were like the kickoff to my baseball and Phillies fandom. So I was in kindergarten at that time. So obviously there were stars on that team. But, you know, post that era, which again didn't really last very long, given that the 93 run was such an anomaly. After that, it was sort of like, all right, what's next? And Scott Rolen was what was next. You know, rookie of the year in 97, you know, when he was 22 years old. And then like after that, it was like, yeah, Scott Rolen is a key piece of this offense. However, he does not want to be here whatsoever. It was just little fights with Larry Boa and little barbs from the press and just that ongoing thing of, and it just contributed to the idea that like, yeah, players generally don't want to play in Philadelphia, which I don't think got cured until Jim Thome agreed to come here much, much later into the future. So
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, is there anybody that just culturally that divide between Scott Rolen and Jim Thome? Like, is there anything to like that affected your fandom at that point that was just like, oh man, nobody wants to come here?
No, I mean, I kind of get it. I mean, when I think of I love Philadelphia, but it's not for everybody. You know, just because I think it's so easy to say that someone does not like a place to mean they hate it forever, you know, but Scott Rolen did not want to play in Philadelphia.
Right. And now you'll see, like, you know, if the opportunity arises and somebody asks him about it, Scott Rolen will be like, you know, Philadelphia, I came up there, they drafted me, I'll always be grateful, it made me the kind of player I am. You know, he'll say stuff like that. The way that, like, Mike Schmidt hated Philadelphia and Phillies fans and then, like, looked back and was like, it's all good, you know, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I mean, you're right. When I was a kid, it was like, we hate Scott Rolen. We hate J.D. Drew because he hates us and this sucks, blah, blah, blah. And you're just like, oh yeah, I'm a child, so I'm buying into that. And then later as an adult, it's like, you know, I totally get it. This place, I get it. I totally, totally get it.
There are times that I don't even like it here.
Who would like it all of the time? It's nice enough Mm-mm. that like players like John Kroc exist who will like go to an event and speak in public and be like, not everybody can play in Philly. And if you can't, it's because you're not tough enough. And it's like, that's such a cool thing to say.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it'd be cool if some Scott Rolens had wanted to play here for like the late 90s and early 2000s. Would have been cool. Would have been neat. You know, when you consider that the last golden era where we had like the best first baseman, second baseman and shortstop in team history all playing simultaneously. And all that was missing was third base. Who the Phillies have the best ever third baseman to play the game from a different era elsewhere. And then Scott Rolen as well, who is a tremendous third baseman. You know, I can't say, you know, there's kind of a gap in time there that doesn't quite make that work. But at the same time, it's just like, damn.
Right, right. I mean, he played. God, when did he retire? Was it 2012?
2012 was his last season in the major leagues. He was 37 years old. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think he had been all that terrible before it.
No. He was putting up, he hit 305 in 2009. He slashed 305, 368, 455, which, you know, that was.
Imagine that.
It was not among his worst numbers by far. That was in 2009. He was with the Blue Jays and then the Reds. And then he was an all-star at 35 and 36 years old with the Reds. His 2011 didn't end at an all-star level, but in 2010 he was an all-star. He won a gold glove and he got MVP votes at 35 years old. And then 37, you know, I think he was done. I'm sure there was like injuries and stuff that contributed to it. Oh, and in 2011, he only played in 65 games. So it must have just been in the first half of the season that he was like around. Yeah, because I remember him being involved in that brawl that was spurred by Brandon Phillips being like, I hate the Cardinals. And then they played the Cardinals the next day. And the Cardinals were like, yeah, what the hell, man? And they got into a huge brawl before the first pitch was thrown. Yeah. So
that was great. Oh, those were days. Yeah. You didn't, like, here's the thing. No one had to throw a baseball at anybody. They just brawled before the game started.
Yeah, that's when you got to get it done in front of cameras so we can all see, but without throwing a fastball 95 miles an hour at someone's brain. Perfect window for a brawl. Of course, someone's career did end from that brawl, unfortunately.
Oh God, it did. Never mind.
Yeah, it was the Johnny Cueto up against the netting.
Oh God, that was the Cueto brawl. Yeah,
he was just kicking with his legs, and I think he kicked some backup catcher in the spine, and his career ended or something. So terrible. You might say there's probably not a right way to have a baseball brawl, unfortunately.
There is not, actually. There is not a right way to have a baseball brawl.
So, in any case, the other player I mentioned who had made contractual history on this date in Phillies history, because that is where we're at as far as talking about things on podcasts, was Cole Hamels in 2009 when he agreed to a 3-year deal with the Phillies, valued to be worth $20.5 million. He was 25 years old at this time. He had obviously gone 4-0 and posted a 180 ERA in 5 postseason starts, and they had just won the World Series. So obviously that was going to happen. And Liz, I figured we could just close out, you know, talking about how cool Cole Hamels is.
He's super cool. He's that he is still playing. It makes me happy. Like, I hate that he's with the Cubs, but, you know, he had a really great, you know, back half last year. They picked up his option. I love him. I love him.
If you were standing outside of a player exit and you had forced your way to the front and you were being held back by the barrier and Cole Hamels was being rushed out by handlers towards the bus, but he stops for one fan and it's you and you have time to say one sentence to Cole Hamels, what do you say? He's waiting, Liz. What are you doing? He's got to get on the bus.
You're listening to it. No, it was whatever it. Whatever it is, it would be stupid. It'd be like, oh my God, or thank you so much, or
Yep, noises. Yeah, that's
it. Would just be noises. Oh God, I'll be so, like, you know, in just a couple of seconds, he'll be gone forever. What can I say other than thank you so much for taking this time? And then he's gone forever. Like, if I had a conversation with him, I'd be like, so tell me about the awesome gossip that you've heard in baseball locker rooms. I look at his Twitter account, which, you know, pictures with his kids. Last year was like Halloween. Like, in the corner of every picture is a giant glass of red wine. I feel like he'd be down with some gossip. I feel like he watches Real Housewives with his wife.
Yeah. Oh no. I think that putting red wine in every Instagram post is the same thing as saying I watch Real Housewives with my wife. That's perfectly reasonable to assume, I think.
Yeah. Exactly. So I would want to, if I had more than just a mere second.
I thought you would go with, you threw a no-hitter on my birthday. I thought that was going to be.
Oh God! How did I forget that happened?
You blew it,
that's
Liz.
Absolutely.
He's on the bus.
I did blow it.
They're just, the tires are kicking up dust. They're gone. You blew it. It's over. God.
And I'm in a heap, weeping inconsolably.
I'm embarrassed for both of us. I don't know. I'm not.
I am. I'm a failure.
I'm not there. Well, I am there. I'm standing like on top of the building, looking down on you, shaking my head. What another blown chance. Well, folks, we hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode of Continued Success, which I think was about nothing. I really couldn't.
It was not about anything, no.
But we got through it together, and we'll get through the next one together. And you can get through any hour of just about any day if you just subscribe, download, and rate any member of the Good Fight Podcast family. We got Hittin' Season with myself, Liz Rocher, John Stolness. on Sunday nights, where we have roundtable discussions about everything Phillies. Then you got the Dirty Inning every other Tuesday, where myself and Dr. Trevor Strunk talk about the most laughable, stupid, or forgotten innings in Phillies history. We've got a new episode coming this coming Tuesday. And honestly, we put up a Dirty Inning special on our Hitting Season Patreon. So for $5, you can hear about the time that Johnny Bench made Steve Carlton so furious he broke all the furniture in his hotel room. It's a tremendous story that pairs with my post on The Good Fight about Steve Carlton's just terrible 1973 season after he signed the largest contract in the National League. And then we got Continued Success, where we talk about just whatever we want regarding the Phillies. We'll obviously also be doing what we did last time. We reviewed a movie, and that'll also be available on our Patreon in the future. And that was a lot of fun. We got a lot of positive responses to that, and I think everybody who enjoys this would enjoy that. So if you got a spare $5, slip it under our door, and you'll have a whole world of even more bonus exclusive content available to you. The Phillies are coming back soon, and we'll get you there. We'll get you to the starting line. Don't worry. All this is going to be over. I promise. Just stay where you are, and we will find you. So join us next time on Continued Success, and thank you for listening.
I'm Michael Kist of Bleeding Green Nation, and I invite you, gentle listener, to join us for the best analysis of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles in the business. BGN Radio provides you with the most informative preview shows, and the Kist and Solak show dives deep into all the scheme and X and O details you could ever want. Plus discussions with the industry's brightest minds, including former NFL players, and press conferences from the Eagles coaching staff to keep you up to date and informed every step of the way. Subscribe to Bleeding Green Nation today. Fly, Eagles, fly.